The policy on transgender service members in the U.S. military has gone back and forth in the last 2 years.
Under the later years of the Obama administration, the Pentagon put an end to a ban on transgender service members. Then, earlier this year, President Trump signed a memo that essentially reinstated that ban.
Now, a federal judge has blocked the Trump administration's effort. The judge found the ban likely unconstitutional and ruled that the Obama-era policy of allowing transgender Americans to serve in the military should stay.
Sherry Swakowski is a retired Army colonel from Wisconsin. She's also the senior out transgender veteran in the country and an advocate for people who are transgender. She's here to share her take on the controversy over that ban. Sherry, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be back with you.
Take us back to July, your initial reaction when President Trump had, in effect, reinstated a ban.
I woke up to check my phone, just kind of was blowing up because of the tweets. Couldn't believe that the commander-in-chief had turned his back on, you know, up to as many as 15,500 transgender service members currently serving in uniform.
And what did that mean? That kind of had a six-month ticking time clock before that would have been enforced. What did that mean for transgender service members that you spoke to after that memo had been signed?
Well, it certainly left them with a feeling of uneasiness. They didn't know if they had been just fired by tweets or if it was going to be something else. And I guess we still don't know for sure.
And what had changed for transgender service members after the Obama administration had made it clear, yes, you can serve and you can serve openly? They were there before that announcement, but now they could serve openly. What was the experience like for them and for the military?
Yes. I mean, we've always been there. We've been serving with members of the LGBT community since the very foundation of our country. When the policy was changed to allow transgender service, it was just like a weight being lifted off of the shoulders of these individuals. So anytime you can eliminate distractors from your job, you'll find that you're able to focus more on it and you'll do a better job. And that kind of was part of the argument for the folks that were concerned that this was going to be a terrible thing. It was going to have terrible effects on readiness. But when you eliminate detractors, you focus better, your individual performance goes up, and in turn, the unit performance and readiness goes up.
Right. Part of the argument had been that this could be a distraction for non-transgender service members. It was a rolling the dice, kind of a social experiment, it was called. What did we see in practice?
Well, in practice, we found very little issue with it. Just as the RAND study that the Pentagon commissioned, this one-year-long study, had predicted. So we've been serving for almost a year and a half openly, and there have been little to no issues concerning transgender service for our ability to deploy.
And then on a related note, when President Trump announced his policy initially on Twitter, he said the military, and I'm quoting here, must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Ending the quote there, and I want to take each of those in turn. You were just talking about concerns over disruption. You think the president was wrong on that point?
Well, you know, I do, and, you know, I put my analyst skills, was an analyst most of my life in the military, to include the Pentagon, for almost 3 years. And when he opened with, after checking with my generals, or in consultation with my generals, and we come to learn that that really never happened, when the first part of anything you read is false, then you become even more suspect about what follows. And of course, the comments about being disruptive, the comments about being having a cost, such a tremendous cost. The RAND study indicated it would run somewhere from $2.4 million to $8.4 million to cover all of the transgender-related health care for all of our service members for just a one-year period. And to put that in context, if you look at just a couple of transgender service members that I personally know, one is a doctor and one is an attack helicopter pilot. And we have probably spent $3 to $4 million in training just two individuals. So that when you talk about cost, surgical costs, health care costs, it really puts it in perspective.
We're talking about the transgender ban in the military. A federal court judge just blocked, or at least partially blocked, that ban. Sherry Swakowski is with us, retired Army colonel from Wisconsin, the senior out transgender veteran in the country. Let's talk about this ruling from the judge now, Sherry. Saying mostly blocking, I've heard some people say basically entirely blocking the implementation of this memo. What do you see in this decision?
Well, I've heard it both ways as well. I'll start off by saying I wasn't really surprised by the ruling. It is a first step, but like I said, this thing has been studied for a year at least by the RAND Corporation and the Pentagon. And what they implemented when they changed the policy, they were very comfortable with it. This is a very constitutionally sound policy. And I think that's what we saw the judge rule. She indicated that directive, I guess I'll call it, that Trump put out to reverse the policy and again ban transgender people really wasn't founded on facts.
The one part of the memo, that directive, that the judge didn't specifically overturn anyway was the ban on military funding for gender reassignment surgery. Some advocates are looking at one of the last lines saying basically we're back to the status quo. We're back to before this memo came out. Something that people are reading both ways. What do you see in that?
Yes, there's definitely some confusion, and I think it deals with Trump's directive because he prohibited funding for reassignment surgery unless it's already in process. And there are that whole medical process has been started for many folks. So I'm thinking that surgeries are going to go ahead. It's not just reassignment surgeries we're talking about, but if you talk to a female to male transgender individual in the military, our reassignment surgeries are, first of all, not wanted by everybody. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking female to male, they may opt for other things like mastectomies, hysterectomies, and those things are taking place. Have taken place and will continue to take place. So I think it's more just the genital surgery, if you will, that is so concerning, so overly concerning, frankly.
And I've been reading around some reaction and comments to news articles, and one response seems to be fine, no problem with transgender people serving openly in the military, but why not wait until leaving military service to do any of the medically related procedures. Don't do it on the taxpayer's time or dime, I guess, is the comment I'm seeing out there a lot.
Two comments on that. Number one, I can tell you from my own experience that dealing with being transgender in the military and not being allowed to be authentic is a major distraction. I obviously did a couple of things correctly during my time to be promoted to colonel in a very competitive environment. But I often wonder how much better of an NCO and an officer I could have been had I been allowed to transition and live authentically. So, and I'm spacing your other comment, your other question here.
The cost, I think people are uncomfortable with, too.
Yes. Why not wait till after? And I think I just addressed that. But the cost is such a minuscule amount of the defense health budget, not just the defense budget, but the defense health budget. So I find it extremely difficult where you can justify providing some medical care, but not complete medical care. So it's like telling someone with clogged arteries that, well, you really need bypass surgery, but we're only going to do stents or something to that effect. It's a similar analogy.
Can you talk a little more about your experience in the military at a time when you couldn't be openly transgender in the military, and not if you wanted to keep your position?
Well, exactly. I was in the position, especially working for the government full-time, both as a federal civil servant and then as an active duty service member, that I knew better than most that being trans was would cost me the profession I loved, even though I sacrificed my authenticity, if you will, for those 3.5 decades that I served in uniform out of love and respect for not only my family, but the profession that I loved. And it was extremely difficult at times. I mean, there were very infrequent periods of living authentically. where I would go out, buy clothing, dress appropriately for the way I felt that I always was. And then, you know, after a couple of hours or a day or two, it was purging all of those purchases and, you know, at least until the next time. And I always knew there would be a next time.
We're talking to Sherry Skrakowski. She's a retired Army colonel and the senior out transgender veteran in the country. We're looking at President Trump's transgender military ban, just blocked this week by a federal judge.
And you can weigh in at 800-642-1234 on the Ideas Network Facebook page as well. What do you think of the block on the Trump administration's policy? Do you think that it goes too far or that it doesn't go far enough? If you're a current or former member of the military, we'd love to hear from you on this at 800-642-1234.
We'll pick up that conversation coming up here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Sherry Skrakowski. She's a retired Army colonel and senior out transgender veteran in the United States. We're looking at a judge's decision to mostly block the White House ban on transgender service members.
And you can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or on our Facebook page. What do you think of the block on the transgender military ban? Do you think that gender reassignment surgery and medical needs should be covered by the military? If you're a member of the military, we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234 or over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
And Sherry, so this block is in place. What does this mean now? Where are we with the federal and military policy on enrollment of new transgender service members and the people who are already there?
Well, it means several things. First of all, it allows the people that are currently serving in uniform who just happen to be transgender, it gives them a little sigh of relief. They're okay for a little while. It also forces Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis to get with his service secretaries. You'll recall that we were supposed to start enlisting transgender civilians come the 1st of July. On the 30th of June, he push that back 6 months. So what that means now is that date is back on. So civilians who have been stable in their gender for 18 months should be able to be enlisted into the armed forces come the 1st of January. And that accession part of it also affects people currently serving. Most people don't understand that. As an example, I have friends who have put in packets to go to leadership training courses, whether it be Officer Candidate School or Warrant Officer Candidate School, and those have been turned back to them without action, because when you graduate from such a course, you are discharged as an enlisted person and you are assessed as an officer. So they got caught up in this with all the civilians as well.
So are they kind of in limbo now, or are they out of it now that this has been blocked?
They are in limbo until the 1st of January. So the 1st of January, they should be able to have their packets go forward. Similarly, I have a great friend who's a graduate of the Naval Academy, spent 10 years on active duty with the United States Navy, was a rotary and fixed-wing helicopter pilot. She is in the reserves, and she is trying to get back in, and she also has had that pushback because of the 6-month delay.
Were there people who, even after the ban had ended, said, I'm not going to go out there, I'm not going to put myself out there openly as a transgender person because I don't know if this is going to stick, if this is going to still be around?
I think there was a lot of that, you know, very similar to after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. I think we probably have less, or maybe 50% of the gay and lesbian people that are serving in the military out. And it's a much higher percentage, I'm sure, for the transgender population that's out there.
I want to bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in La Crosse. Lisa, hi.
Hi, I'm ex-Army. I'm straight. Ben, I have a strong opinion. I'm in the VA system now, but I have a very strong opinion that if the military and the government or the VA is going to cover mental health services, period, then they need to cover all mental health services, not just pick and choose the ones they like.
Lisa, thanks for the call. And Sherry, I guess she's saying this would be part of covering the mental health needs of service members.
Well, exactly. And you can't just provide, let's say, hormone treatment and counseling without providing the surgical needs that those individuals require. I mean, we have, the average transgender service person has 8+ years of service and 2 or more deployments. Transgender service members are in extremely important roles. They're company commanders, they're drill sergeants, they're special operators. We're on submarines. We're infantry officers and pilots and physicians. This is an important part, not large necessarily, but a very important part of our military strength.
Lisa, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Sherry Sokowski, retired Army colonel, looking at the transgender ban in the military that President Trump had signed as a directive a couple months back. Now a federal judge blocking most of that directive. Still time for you to share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. We heard from Jacqueline on Facebook who says the only question should be, can you perform your duty?
And that's exactly what Secretary Ash Carter said last June 30th when he announced a change in policy. He indicated that the things that are most important to getting the job done is an individual's ability and their character. And being transgender doesn't affect your ability to do that.
Thanks for that, Jacqueline. Do you see lessons from the past when it came to racial integration in the military, expanding the role of women in the military over the years? That was in stages, I think. Don't ask, don't tell. Are there lessons we could or you think should have learned?
Well, very definitely. You know, the president, when he tweeted out on the 25th or 26th of July, it happened to be the 69th anniversary of the integration of the military and President Truman's desegregation of the military. That same year, women were allowed to enlist for the very first time outside of wartime service and be paid the same as their male counterparts. So we progressed from there to the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, all combat roles being open to females. And if the person can do the job, why shouldn't they be able to have any job they desire?
What kind of reaction have you seen in the military culture to openly serving transgender service members, apart from the transgender service members themselves, I should say?
Well, I can tell you that when the president came out with the tweets that many of the commands came to their transgender service members and called them in to reassure them, letting them know that 3 tweets does not a policy make and that they had their backs. And that was very, you rally around, you attack one of us, you attack all of us.
Let's bring on another caller now. Wes is with us in La Crosse. Wes, hi.
Hello. Yeah, I have an opinion about that myself, and what bothers me a little bit is when I joined the service, I had to be physically fit to join the service. I could not go in there and have them do an examination and say, well, if we give you operations of whatever kind, then we can make you fit at taxpayers' expense. And I think it's really unfair that someone can go in and say, well, I need transgender operation and have it done at taxpayers' expense when that's not afforded to other people. And when you say that it's only a small percent of the budget, well, that's a small percent that the other people are not allowed to exercise.
Wes, thanks for the call. What do you think, Jerry?
Yes, a couple of things. Number one, there is no path for transgender civilians to come into the military and then have surgery. The only way they can come into the military is to be stable in their gender for 18 months. That's what the directive talked about. And as far as, the cost for it, again, they're really, how do you justify morally only treating a person partway for their medical condition? And that's what it is. It's no different than someone who has chronic heart disease or diabetes. It falls into the same category. It's a medical condition deserving of treatment.
Thanks for that call. And Sherry, as we start to wrap up, looking ahead, this is one judge blocking this. It's not, the court battles aren't done. The U.S. Justice Department is reviewing the ruling. It says it disagrees with it. What are you looking ahead to now as that progresses through the courts?
Well, I think it'll be an interesting time, but I guess I go back to my original statement that when this policy was put in place, it was a well-thought-out policy. And by well-thought-out, I mean that it was constitutionally sound. And I think that we're going to have other circuit courts, judges come up with a similar viewpoint. And if we don't, it'll be taken higher.
If there's a transgender civilian out there, maybe just out of high school, say thinking, I want to enroll in the military, I want to enlist, but this is a big gray area. I don't know what's going to come out. What would you say to them?
I would tell them to continue to chase their dreams. If you want to enroll in the military, you should be able to do that starting the 1st of January, as long as you are stable in your gender and have been for the last 18 months.
And then finally, your thoughts for service members currently serving who are transgender who might be listening. What do you say to them?
Well, I would say that we've been there before. We've done this before. It was studied, for a year. That's twice the amount of time that Secretary Mattis has been allotted by the Commander-in-Chief for his new study. I personally don't think there's going to be a different outcome coming from the Department of Defense, and I say that because the service members and the leadership in the military knows the value of their transgender service members.
We'll leave it there for now. Sherry, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.